Well, it's nice to be back. It's nice to sit with all of you and see many of you again. And I was sitting this last month on retreat, silent retreat. I had a little cabin at a retreat center where they brought food at the noontime every day in a little bag. And so they leave it outside. And so I didn't talk to anyone or see people much. And it was basically not a month-long retreat. It was 4 5-day retreats in a row. Because I have small kids at home, I couldn't be gone the whole month. So I came home on the weekend. And what it meant was I thought of it mostly as 4 retreats. Because if I thought of it as a month-long retreat, then your mind would easily go thinking about interruptions. But, you know, 4 independent retreats. It's pretty good in a month. And I did think of a few things to say, but it's a little bit hard to talk. You know, I haven't been talking for a month much and haven't had much in my mind. And I think I've forgotten everything I know. We'll find out soon enough. For me, one of the very valuable and precious opportunities or possibilities in human life is to bring the mind to peace, the heart to peace, to experience some degree or of peace, inner peace. And as I come back, I came back Friday afternoon and back at some of the normal things of life. And one of the things I've become aware of quite acutely is how much suffering there is in this world. And it's almost as if the more peaceful you become, the more sensitive you become to the suffering around. And I feel that the potential for peace is something that is so valuable to tap into, to touch, to know about. Because if you know the possibility for deep inner peace that's not dependent on the conditions of the world being any particular way, then the conditions of the world won't influence you so much, won't influence your unhappiness or happiness in the way that worldly kind of conditions will often do. So this idea of peace seems very important for me, especially coming out of the retreat. It was in some ways very peaceful. When I first got to the retreat center and was moving my bags in, I thought, I was just so delighted by the place. The place just seemed so peaceful. And just so happy to be in this peaceful place. And I was packing my bags to leave on Friday. I kind of remembered that and looked around and the place didn't seem peaceful anymore. just the place. It was a beautiful place, and the redwoods and Boulder Creek. And but what I thought had happened was that the sense of outer peace wasn't diminished, but was replaced with a very strong sense of inner peace. And that inner peace was what was the palpable thing, the very strong thing. And the outer world was just what it was. So one of the vehicles that I know for experiencing peace is to be present. And so can be a lot of work to become present. And at the retreat center I was at, these little cabins, there were little 6 cabins up in the hilltop. That was for retreatants. And I hardly ever saw the other retreatants. But at the edges of the trail going to those cabins, there was a sign that said, Meditators at Work. And I found that actually quite heartening. because sometimes it felt like, you know, certainly a lot of work. And it was a work to keep showing up and being present. And especially going away four times in a row and coming back and having these four retreats in a row. Each time I came back, it had to reestablish the presence. You reestablish the ability to be present. And I could be kind of, you know, conventionally present pretty well. But to be conventionally present and to be really present is, you know, it's a world of difference between the two. So I got to look at what it takes to become present. And in a sense, having four retreats, there were different issues that came up, different Mondays when I started, that I had to kind of work through in order to arrive at some real presence. And, the first week I was on retreat, I had this expression that I was working through all these ghosts. It's maybe kind of an unfortunate term, but that was what came to my mind. And all these thoughts, conversations, people, events, memories, that kept coming. And they were kind of ephemeral. They're kind of not really here. They were, you know, distant places and distant times. They weren't there in that place. And so they didn't have any, they were kind of transparent like ghosts, right? They're kind of, you put your hands right through them like you put hands through a ghost, I guess. And so just all these ghosts, you know, kind of not really real. But my mind took them as real. My mind took them as being important. My mind kept slipping off onto these tracks, ghost tracks. And I would say, oh, ghost. And, you know, ghost would vanish. And then another one would come, or the same one would come back. Another way of talking about this is an analogy I like, is that of you've had a nice hike, beautiful sunny day. You come to the edge of a river, and you have a nice picnic. You kind of take a little nap. Everything's great in the world. You're peaceful. You're very contented, happy, and you're laying there on the bank of the river. Just watching the river go by. It's very nice to watch the river go by. And then a showboat goes by. And the next thing you know, you're on the showboat. And you're no longer content and happy. Maybe it's exciting to be in the showboat at first. It's exciting because they have casino on it and there's a chance to win. And that's quite exciting and enlivening and energizing, possibility of winning. And but you know, you don't even notice you've left your peaceful riverbank. And maybe it takes, you know, a few months to realize you're on this riverboat. And then things, oh, wait a minute, I think I'll get off. Broke. And then there's, you know, but then you're on the riverbank again, and then there's other riverboats that come by. And some are quite captivating and kind of pull you off the riverbank into the boat. And so everybody has their riverboats that pulls the mind, the riverboats of thoughts, of ideas, of concerns. Some people have riverboats of worry. And there's big red flashing lights, danger, danger, on the boat. And so jump on that boat pretty quickly. And some people have the riverboats are prison boats. And for some reason, they willingly jump on the prison boats. And then they're sitting there kind of imprisoned in their attachments and desires and fears and limiting ideas. And then there's riverboats of, like showboats of desire, or riverboats of hate. There's riverboats of lethargy, of laziness. That's a good one. You lay there and kind of meander down the river, kind of not doing much, letting your... And then there's some really interesting riverboats. There's the spiritual riverboats that come along. You're on the riverbank, quite peaceful, quite happy, contented, and this glorious religion comes along. It might even be Buddhism. And it has all this promise. You know, there's a big billboard that says spiritual experience on it. So you get onto that riverboat, a spiritual experience. And, you know, it takes you not just months, it takes maybe a few years to get off that one. And then there's the spiritual identity boat. There's a lot of identity boats, me boats, big billboards and pictures of you. So yeah, it's pretty captivating. Nice to be on those. And you get older and older, and at some point you kind of look around the billboard over the side of the boat, and you realize that's not you anymore. That's what you were like 20 years ago on that billboard. But the spiritual boats are interesting, you know, and getting on these spiritual boats. There's another boat to get on. The mind goes off and thought, the world of thoughts and ideas and negotiating ideas and concepts and even feelings. There's the ascetic boats, the Zen ascetic boats. You know, you can harmony with the river, very sleek, beautiful, simple boats. They just seem so made for the river, kind of harmonizes with the flow of the river. And just like one with the river, just seem like, this is it, you're one with the river. Still the river, still a boat, not being there and, you know, in the riverbank. And so it's very important to be able to see the difference between being at peace, having the mind be still and not caught by things, not caught up in things, not preoccupied by things, versus the mind which is preoccupied or caught up in things. And it gets caught up so quickly and so easily. And so it takes times of work to keep coming back. It takes repetition, coming back, to being present to seeing what's here. What's happening? What's happening? Oh, it's a boat. It's a thought. It's a feeling. It's a sensation. Just seeing it over and over again, coming back. And one of the ways of knowing that you're really present, really present as opposed to kind of conventionally present, is that you see a boat go by and you don't get on. You see a thought arise and you say, oh, that's just a thought. I don't have to get involved in that thought. That thought is a present moment experience. It just arises there in the present moment and it does what it does and passes away. But you're not caught in it. You're not involved in it. You realize I'm here in a sense, like I'm here and the thought is there. A little bit of that sense, you know. There's a stability or a presence of mind that doesn't get on that boat. Just sees it goes by. And so to be present, you know, in some ways is a very simple thing. And I'm struck many times by how simple it is. And sometimes it's deceptively simple, so simple that we don't appreciate its value. And sometimes it's infuriatingly simple, because it's such a simple thing, but it's so hard to do. It slips off so easily, so quickly. And but meditation is work. Meditators are at work. And it's interesting to reflect on what does it take to become present. So what does it take for each of you to become present? And that's a question you can carry with you every day. Because in different settings, different situations, different things, different retreats, different things are required to work through in order to really arrive, really be present. And so I can list a few of the things that it might take. Some of them I think are quite interesting. One is it takes some kind of understanding that it's a valuable thing to do, to be present, as opposed to caught up. To have that little bit, sense of independence or freedom from the conditions of the world, from all the boats, all the activities of the life. It's valuable not to be caught in that, but to be present and here, to see it in a way that you're free of it. So have some understanding of the value of being present. Another thing that helps is to have some kind of confidence and even faith that it's really valuable. It's one thing to understand it's valuable. It's another to have real confidence and sense of tremendous faith. Yes, this is something that I can put my heart into. Kind of a wholehearted feeling. Yes, to this is what I would like to do, is be present. So sometimes it takes a long time to develop that strong sense of faith or confidence or wholeheartedness that this is something that direction of my heart wants to take. There has to be a willingness to be present. It's one thing to understand. It's another thing to be willing. I mean, some of those showboats are so interesting. And so, you know, there's I'll have the riverbank, but later, right? You know, not yet. This is so good. And sometimes in meditation, like in retreats, certain fantasies can have that kind of little hook on it. Yes, but I'll get back to meditation later, because this fantasy is so good, so juicy. And after all, it's been hard. I mean, I'm working so hard in the retreat. I deserve a break. So you get on that boat. It can take a lot of courage to be present. It's not easy. And what we are called on to be present for sometimes is very difficult material. And there's often a good reason why some people find it hard to be present, because what they have to look at in themselves is often quite difficult. Sometimes we have to look at the deepest, darkest kind of secrets of our minds, the fears, the anxieties, the terrible memories, the all kinds of things that go on in the mind. These strong habits, greed, hate. And so sometimes it takes tremendous courage to stay present. I've known people who've had a lot of fear come up on retreat. And it's a little bit, you know, kind of, on one hand, a little bit surprising, because retreats are some of the safest places in the world. At least the retreats, you know, around here. They go to Spirit Rock, for example. People don't even lock their doors at night. You know, it's not that many places you can go in the world where you sleep with unlocked doors. It's very safe. And I've seen people be more afraid of Spirit Rock than almost anywhere else in the world. You know, completely petrified. When you look around, nothing's going on. But, you know, it's really frightening sometimes to kind of meet yourself, to confront yourself, to see what's going on in there. And so sometimes it takes a lot of courage. And in order to be present, there has to be the arousing of courage, the strength, the developing of courage. And some people are my heroes because of the courage that they've had in doing a simple thing of showing up and being present. Sometimes it takes something has to be resolved before you can be present, really present. Sometimes there are issues that need to be dealt with. And there's a whole range of issues that could come up. Sometimes it has to do with our past behavior. Sometimes people's past behavior is there's kind of a moral reckoning that comes on retreat. And you thought your morals was just fine or something, and then suddenly you realize, oh my God, what did I do? I didn't realize. I hurt that person, or what did I do? So sometimes there has to be some kind of a resolution of our ethics or our past behavior. And it can be as simple as needing to go tell someone you're sorry, to apologize to someone. Or it could make it necessary to go and do some kind of confession or some kind of behavioral change or something. And I've known people who have had to leave retreat. It didn't make sense to continue in retreat. They had to actually leave the retreat, go see someone, do some work, personal work with them or whatever, and then they can come back. One friend of mine was in India in the 60s on retreat, and he came to a block in his practice, and Ram Dass was there, and they were kind of friends, and Ram Dass told him, you have to go back to America and see your father. And so he went and cut his hair and had a tailor in India make a suit for him. And he put on a suit and went back to America to see his father. Before he went to America, Ram Dass said to him, but don't stay long. It's like you get on some riverboats, and some riverboats are going to sink before you reach shore. So you've got to shore up the boat, you've got to fix up the boat, right? You have to kind of repair the boat before so you don't sink before you get to the shore. You can talk about the shore forever, how wonderful the shore is, and if you don't fix the boat, you're not going to get to the shore. Oh, there's another great boat that really captivates some people. It's the rescue boat. And that's the boat where you're going to rescue everybody. And because people need rescuing, right? And so you go out there with, you know, the rescue boat, and two boats out there are going to collide, so you get out there and you rescue them so they can go smooth, goes down the river smoothly, safely, you know, together. Or then there's the ones that, you know, are certainly going to drown. It's good to go out there and rescue them so they don't drown. And then there's an interesting rescue attempt where you see a boat that's about to kind of veer too close to the shore. It's going to maybe bump against the shore. Heaven forbid, boats aren't supposed to bump up against the shore. They have to go dock against the pier. And so you go there and you pull the boat away from the shore. That shore where it would have been so nice to rest, the peaceful place. And sometimes actually there's spiritual rescuers who actually get in the way of that process of crashing to safety, crashing to peace and freedom. So you have to be careful for the rescue boats. Sometimes they're not so useful. Sometimes they're good. And some of us are rescue people. We just, you know, it's one of my traps sometimes is to be the helper. And sometimes that's, you know, I get on the helping boat too easily. So sometimes you have to leave the retreat or leave, you know, do something. Some atonement might have been necessary. Sometimes psychological work needs to be done in order to work through something. So we can get to this thing that was so simple. Just be present. But these things have to be worked through. There has to be a lot of letting go that goes on. And you know, letting go of almost everything. Of everything. If you're holding on to something, then you're not really present. You can be present knowing you're holding on, but you haven't taken your presence to the point of being at peace. And so if you're still holding on to something, then... So there's all kinds of stuff you have to let go of. We have to let go of. And we have to let go of... One of the great ones is self-identity. You're allowed to have an identity. That's fine, because it's kind of hard not to have one. But you have to let go of holding to it. And that's much harder. That's really hard to do sometimes. And there's all kinds of identities people have. And some of them, you know, are, you know, gender or ethnic or, you know, things like that. Some of them have to do with their work. Some have to do with their behavior. Some have to do with their mind. Look how smart I am, or how beautiful I am, how kind I am. Some of them are unfortunate identities. Oh, I'm a terrible person. I'm just, you know, unworthy. I can't do it. Well, some of the thoughts that some of the things that have to be let go of is our thoughts, beliefs. There's a lot of beliefs and opinions that get in the way of being present. One of the ones for meditators can be, oh, I can't do it. You know, and you see that on retreat. It happened to me sometimes on retreat. Oh, I can't do this. You know, you're trying to be present. And then sometimes on retreat, you lose perspective. You're so much more present than you are normally. And then the mind says, oh, I can't do this. At the last day of the retreat, Friday morning, at one point, I was sitting, practicing, and I thought, oh, I'm pretty ordinary. This is, after a month of sitting, I'm just kind of ordinary again. I mean, nothing happened. This is a little bit embarrassing. All this work and effort, and nothing happened. And then I went down to check out from the office at the retreat center, and I could barely speak. You know, I wasn't so ordinary. I'd lost perspective. You know, it had become ordinary. The extraordinary had become ordinary. So it seemed like, you know. So it was really easy in that situation. Oh, you know, oh no. I had, you know, for a few minutes, it didn't last long. Oh no, nothing happened in the street. I have nothing to show for it. And so all kinds of beliefs. There's also the beliefs of what's supposed to happen. I'm supposed to get concentrated. I'm supposed to be mindful. I'm supposed to be present. And those are okay thoughts to have kind of very, very lightly. But you can get caught up in thoughts, I'm supposed to be a certain way. And that's another boat to be on that prevents us from being present. Now, one of the marvelous things about being present is that being present has no conditions. about what it's supposed to be present for. Presence doesn't have a condition about what it's supposed to be present for. So nothing has to be any different in order to find your presence, except you have to know what is going on in the present moment. So if you have a thought that says, oh, I can't be present, and you see that thought, that ghost, see that boat, oh, there's that thought, I can't be present, and you're present for that thought, you're present. So you don't have to get rid of that thought, you have to see it for what it is. So I found it in the retreat very, very meaningful to realize that nothing has to be any different moment by moment. I just have to kind of wake up to this. Wake up to this. Wake up to this. And if I thought that I was the one who was waking up to it, that was also another boat that I'd get on. Look at me. I wake up. I'm here. I've done it. You know, as soon as I said, I did it, I'd veered back into the river. I kind of left the presence. So there's a wonderful thing that the more and more present you become, there's this way in which self-preoccupation or self being caught up in oneself begins to dissolve away or fall away. And it can be very disconcerting if the whole way in which we base our life, how we live our life, is based on some self-identity or some being a certain way or self, and to suddenly find that, you know, that you're not oriented around self anymore, then is it safe? Is it okay? How do you prove that to anybody that you're great? So to have this fall away, the sense of self, is just really great. And in order to have some deep level of peace, the presence has to go into that level where that boat, the boat of self, kind of falls away. So what does it take to be present? I think is a great question. And not to ask the question in the abstract, but to ask it in the particulars for you. What does it take for you? And asking yourself that question, to appreciate that how complex or complicated or deep the heart and the mind is, and that even though being present is a simple thing, the work of getting there involves all of us in the full richness and depth of our psyche in order to work through that and see it. And I think it's one of the great works of human life is to work through all the different things, all the issues, all the different things that keep you, prevent you from being pristinely present. So what is it that keeps you present today and tomorrow, the next day? And what does it take, once you realize what's keeping you from being present, what does it take to work through that? And you want to be a little bit careful that you don't take mindfulness instruction too simplistically. That just because mindfulness is such a simple instruction, be present for what is, it can lend itself to the idea that you're supposed to then be simple-minded. You're supposed to be kind of just simpleton, kind of, you know, you're not supposed to kind of be a rich human being. I think that being present for what is, the instructions are simple, but our minds are complex. And to appreciate that, so that we really take an honest look at it and are willing to do the inner work that kind of works through and settles the mind. And so the mind can come to peace. It's possible to summarize the Buddha's teaching. Everything about the Buddha's teaching was pointing towards bringing the mind to peace. Bringing the mind to peace. It's great. So, I think I've talked long enough for someone who hasn't talked. I hope these words are helpful for you and that somehow you might be inspired to look at yourself and explore this question. What is it that keeps you from being present? So, thank you very much.